Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
From Postcard from the Past and the award-winning Wardour Studios, this is Podcast from the Past, the Postcard Podcast. This is a place where we decipher biro on printed cardboard, make semi-private messages fully public, and emerge none the wiser as we investigate old picture postcards, their messages and their images, and they take us from Arbroath to Zenner, from Ibiza to the Norfolk Broads, and we explore what it is that causes us to keep hold of these little cardboard rectangles. In our new streamlined format, each time I now welcome just one guest, and it's their postcards that act as small clues to direct us towards memories, mysteries, and stories. I'm Tom Jackson. I'm delighted to say that my guest today on the podcast is writer and part-time man of the mountains, Max Leonard. Max, welcome to the podcast from the past.
Thanks, Tom.
Now, you may know Max from his work bringing the Rio tape slide archive about Hackney in the 80s to book form. You may have read Higher Calling, about shepherds, snowploughs and cyclists' obsessions with the mountains, or Bunker Research, chronicling crumbling 1930s fortifications in the French Alps. But, most recently, his interest in mountains and their visual language has led him to put together Vintage Alpine Postcards, a collection of vintage Alpine postcards in book form, which we will doubtless return to. But Max joins us today bearing... Is that an N16 postmark I can see?
Yeah, pretty much. N16, Stoke Newington, classed as North London with the N, but, you know, it's Hackney, so it's kind of northeast.
It's gone east a bit.
Exactly. And actually, I live right next door now in E8, which is Dalston, but the Rio Cinema you were just talking about is E8, but I used to visit when I was a kid, so when they found all these photos of the cinema from the 80s, I just couldn't wait to get stuck in and see if I could find a picture of myself as a kid.
Well, this is when Dalston didn't quite have the cachet it has now.
Yeah, it was very different then, and Stoke Newington was very different then too. It's strange to have been there for, well, on and off for such a long time. I mean, in between my first residence as a child, I moved about a bit, and actually then became pretty nomadic for quite a lot of my 20s and 30s and spent a lot of time in France and up mountains, that kind of thing.
Oh, but well, you've only yourself to blame for that.
Yeah, I know. But then I've returned pretty much home, pretty much exactly where I started.
So you were looking for pictures of yourself in the Rio archive. Did you find yourself?
No, I found pictures of people in my class, teachers. Other people working on the project found pictures of their spouses and, you know, people getting on and off buses that knew, that kind of thing. But yeah, I must have looked at 12, 15,000 JPEGs closely.
Still didn't find yourself.
No.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm pretty sure I'm not there.
You've evaded your own research.
Yeah.
You can put yourself in the next book.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Max, do you still send postcards?
Yeah, I was just thinking about this. I spent a lot of time, as I say, pretty nomadic. So I was writing and riding my bike a lot in the Alps and all over the place, and lived in Nice for quite a long time. And when I was like that, I didn't really send any at all because I just wasn't really anywhere. So, or none of it sort of felt, you know, momentous enough or like a holiday enough to actually send a card.
So because it was more like a lifestyle, like work.
Yeah, and because it was not, you know, I was never sort of at leisure in a destination, you know, a postcard is a kind of holiday thing.
You weren't sitting at the cafe table. wondering what to do.
No. I didn't. I guess I didn't really have a. Other than that, I didn't really have a home to send them to. You know, and I guess you do think about, well, obviously your mum and your dad and those sort of people. But no, I do. I pick them up a lot when I go to exhibitions and art galleries and that kind of thing. And I was thinking actually on the way here, probably the last postcard I sent was from Port Lockroy. Don't know if you know of or...
Go on.
Port Lockroy is in the Antarctic.
Goodness me.
So it's the southernmost place that one can send mail from anywhere. Yeah. It's an old British...
And we have a winner.
No, I won something. I don't know what it is. But it's an old British... research station. I think it was originally a military base, and now it's a research station and a museum of, you know, this old.
So, what was you had to unpack this? What were you doing? Why were you there?
Well, I
don't tell me you cycled there.
No, I won a competition to cruise to Antarctica.
Wow!
I know on Instagram, which is
you're joking.
I actually won something, and it actually happened. Yeah, although. I won it in 2020, and it didn't happen until 2023 for obvious reasons.
Okay, but it happened still. They hadn't gone bust or run away. Or...
No, they and the companies involved honoured it incredibly.
Wonderful.
You know, at first, they said, oh, we think it'll happen in 2021, January 2021, so the Antarctic summer. Obviously, that was cancelled quite quickly. Then we thought maybe January 2022. That was cancelled with a week to go because... entry regulations to Argentina, etc.
Right.
So we couldn't, me and my girlfriend couldn't quite believe it, but we got there and we didn't actually manage to visit Port Lockroy because it was a bit choppy, so they couldn't take us off the cruise ship on the, you know, the little inflatable boats down to the museum and the post office. But they got the postmasters. In fact, it was two female British researchers who are living there on this tiny yep. island, barely bigger than this studio.
Good Lord. And that is small, listeners.
Yes. So they got them onto the ship to sell us postcards, and then we got them stamped. They paid £1, and they went all the way from Port Lockroy in Antarctica via Cambridge to the Scott Polar Research Institute.
Wow. And were they British stamps?
They were British stamps, and when it got a postmark...
So that was a British post office?
It was a British post office, but the postmark actually said Cambridge. So, but we did have a sort of ceremonial Port Lockroy stamp with a penguin on it that had the date on.
Thank goodness.
Yeah,
otherwise, your story would have been ruined.
I know. My godson got one of those, and he would not have been impressed if it was just Cambridge. But he was pretty impressed because it was Antarctica.
Yeah, and they know what they're doing, putting a penguin on it.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, that's a very good postcard to have sent. Yeah. Very good. Now, before we see and hear the cards that Max brought along, I'll give you a quick one of mine. This is, of course, a postcard from the past card, like I do on Twitter or my book. An old card from which I've selected just a part of the message. So this is a card of Paynton in Devon. It's a multi-view, rather gaudy, sort of corner to corner is the way the picture's been divided up. And... Actually, it doesn't give you a description of what you're seeing, but you're seeing a busy beach and a pier, a harbour, a bit more sandy beach, and a sort of thatched cottage. And the card has a code number, B42. I don't know what that really indicates. Anyway, this is actually sent to someone in Paynton. So it's from Paynton to Paynton, quite local. Actually sent from Southampton, maybe? In the 80s, can't see the exact date. Anyway, I suppose what intrigued me about this was just the tiresome complexity of some people's lives or the way they choose to express them. So it says, Dear Joan and all, this is from Maureen and family. Dear Joan and all, Karen and I arrived home 9:50 p.m. Good trip home. Thanks again for having us. Freddie had put my cake for Dad in a tin, but not before he cut a chunk out of it to eat. He said he didn't hear me say it was for Dad. I made another Monday, put it in the oven. 5 minutes later, we had a power cut for 1 hour. So that cake don't look too good. Take care of yourself, Joan. From Take Care of Yourself, Joan, Love, Maureen. So just a sort of story of wasted moments, really.
It's not really worth writing home about that, is it? But
no.
And someone did. Yeah,
this went wrong, and then that went wrong. but thinking of you, I suppose. Maybe they're meant to be funny, I don't know. But it just seemed a bit sad, really. Yeah. Someone stole some cake, and then there was a power cut. I'll give you another one. See if this is a bit more cheerful. See what we've got here. This is the Illuminations at Broadstairs. I must say, if they're the Illuminations, I wouldn't be advertising them. Mm-hmm. It appears to be some flower beds with some lights on, and that's more or less it. It's certainly not Blackpool or Vegas. But anyway, in 1971, that was considered worth putting on a postcard. And there's a lot of nothing going on, a lot of lawn by night.
Yeah, dark space.
Yeah. Here's what a lawn looks like if you switch the lights off. Anyway, it's sent to the New King's Road in fashionable Fulham from Janet, and she sent it in August 1971. And, oh, yeah, just one little detail, and this appealed to me. She says, we've had a good week. Today is Friday, and it's raining. We saw Don's and Peggy and Peter and Rosemary on Tuesday. We went to the circus in Margate and Dreamland on Wednesday. Today it is Beat the Tide contest on the sand. See you soon, love, Janet. And I was just intrigued by the idea of a Beat the Tide contest. Do you know what that is?
I don't know. No, never heard of it.
It's not going to work.
No, it can't be. Well, on the other hand, it can't be too difficult. You just have to step far enough back to...
You just stand there and see who gets... yeah.
I mean, the beach at Broadstairs, it's a lovely little sandy... beach, and it's not particularly steep or treacherous or anything. I mean, I'm not sure that...
There's no beating to be done. You can't beat it. The tide will come in and you will get wet.
And then it will go out.
Yeah. And maybe you'll drown in the interim. I don't know. I hope not. But anyway, that was what Janet spent her time doing. And I should remind you, listening to the podcast, images of all the cards we have today are going to be on the show notes, postcardfromthepast.co.uk, so you can see that the cards are all real. Now, Max... you've obviously just got a book about postcards at the moment, but you've brought along for the recording some postcards of your own. Let's see the first card that you've got with us, with you.
Right, here we go. This is a glacier. It's
after a fashion.
After a fashion, yeah. It's a lithograph, so it's not a photo. It's... I think it's from the year 1898, so pretty early. Mm. And it's by a guy called F. Killinger from Zurich, the illustration, that is. And
so this is a very fanciful image of an alpine scene. Can you describe what we're seeing? Because this is unusual.
Yeah, so we have the sort of, you know, your standard mountains in the background with some snow on top. But then in the middle of the valley, coming down right through the middle of the card, is a huge... great torrent of ice, which actually it's more than a torrent of ice. It has a sort of very grumpy, slightly foreboding, old man's face on it, as if the glacier is pretty cheesed off about something or other.
Is he the sort of spirit of the ice? Is that the idea?
I would think so. I mean, I've looked up this guy Killinger, and this is really what he specialised in. He made a lot of he made quite a few postcards along these kind of things, but he specialised in putting faces on things. So there's another one.
Makes you stand out from the other cards, I guess.
Well, yeah, I mean, and so it's sort of quite adventurous for a sort of coloured lithograph in 1898, I'd imagine. But there's other ones as well. He has with the Eiger, the Monch, and the Jungfrau mountains all in a row, and each of them has a face. And the Jungfrau, which means maiden in German, is a young woman, and the Monch is a monk, and the other.
Oh, so he sort of literalizes the names and makes them happen visually.
Exactly. And at the foot of the glacier on this particular card is a woman swimming away with sort of scantily clad.
Very.
And so this is the Rhone Glacier. And then at the bottom, the woman is the River Rhone. So at the top, the German, which I don't know, the German inscription says something along the lines of the Rhone heads south. No, actually, there it is in French as well, which I can read. It says, and it says, the Rhone flees south towards France.
Oh, is she fleeing, the maiden?
She is. So it looks like she's kind of waving goodbye to the glacier that has spawned the River Rhone.
Yes, because she's from the melted ice.
Yeah, and she's heading off down to, you know, greener pastures and to water all those lovely grapes that make Côte d'Aron.
And he resents that, by the looks of it? He's certainly not very happy about it.
Well, he's not very happy about something. That's what I'd definitely say. And I mean, looking at it's interesting if you try and put this in a bit of context, that, you know, in terms of tourism and why people were going to the mountains, that kind of thing. And I'd say probably before the mid 18th century, people just did not really think about going to the mountains, right, and not climbing up them and anything like that. And then there's a sort of development of scientific interest, and then there's a few mountain climbers start coming, and then you get, I don't know, you get, you know, Byron and Coleridge and Wordsworth and Mary Shelley and all the kind of romantic ideas of the mountains. And by that point, the kind of early, mid 19th century, the railways are starting to come too. So you start to have this influx of people coming into the mountains. And that sort of quite neatly, I guess, in terms of this card, dovetails with the kind of golden era of postcard making. And so I'd sort of argue that mountains are just as important as seasides to postcards. You know, obviously I would say that they're the second classic scene.
Yes, yes.
But if you think that, I think I'm right in saying that the first postcards were invented in Austria, and then they spread to Switzerland and Italy and then Germany and a bit later France, that you know, there's a kind of very mountainy...
Yes, yes. And in fact, there's a famous diatribes against postcard sending and writing about, is it Rigi?
Yes.
And you've probably read the article, some 19th century journalist was complaining that people weren't looking properly at the mountains, they were too busy writing postcards.
Oh, right, interesting.
And
that's the one that Turner painted, didn't he?
Ah, is that right?
Yeah.
Is that right? Well, you know, a few years later, Turner would have been just picking up a postcard and writing on the back of it instead.
Yeah, why bother, yeah.
But this, in a way, this I suppose you could argue this kind of keeps going, that very romantic tradition, because it is not a photographic image in any sense. It's not a modern image. It's deliberately medieval, really, in the kind of way it's portraying the spirit of the land. It's very, it's very fanciful, but it's also very old-fashioned. It's not it's not of the moment, whereas the photographic images at the time would have looked super fresh.
Yeah, and they would have been very consciously modernist, I guess.
Real people, real faces.
Yeah, what I really like about Alpine postcards, and I could have chosen one from the 1960s or 70s, but I love this idea that you see the development of how we go to the mountains and of what we're doing, and so you get all this different tourism, and then it moves on to, I guess, the sort of grand old age of those beautiful, you know, Art Deco hotels and, you know, spa towns, and then you get the kind of concretization, if you can say that, of, you know, the mass tourism and the roads going through and the ski resorts, and it all gets a bit ugly but functional but
and busy
and very busy, and this sort of amazing poignancy, I think, of the 50s and 60s and 70s of mass travel and mass tourism to the Alps, and the sun's always shining and and the snow's always brilliant in the postcards, but the idea, you know, now you look at it and you look at the glaciers and you think, wow, this is, you know, quite sad. But I think if you look at Killinger's other postcards, which you can, if you type in his name in online, you can find them quite easily. And so there's, there's pictures of, you can see that there are almost like the mountains are protesting at the at the train line being dug through them. So
they're actually sort of under attack here from a mountaineer.
Yeah, it feels like they're under attack, and then there's the train line that's gone all the way up, you know, round the Eiger and very famously there. But I sort of feel like this guy, this glacier guy, he's bemoaning the presence of people in the mountains, and
these are eco postcards.
Eco postcards
before their time.
Yeah, and I've got a lot of different postcards of the Rhone Glacier, because it's a very famous place. There's a kind of very famous Wes Anderson-style hotel.
Oh, yeah.
On this beautiful Swiss mountain road. And then there's a an ice cave in the glacier that you can go visit. And you can still go do this. But if you look at the postcards over the years, you have this amazing, you know, grumbling huge behemoth of a glacier that comes all the way down to the valley floor. And then the next one you see, there's some horses and carts, and the glacier has kind of receded and shrunk a bit. And then the next one I've got from the 60s or maybe the 50s, you can see that the glacier has shrunk again. And
really? So the sort of timelessness that you expect to see in mountains, if you look carefully, it's not quite like that.
Yeah, and you can really chart what's been happening through, you know, our effect on the mountains through these postcards. And I was looking at all this through postcards, but there's a photo professor and critic called Francis Hodgson who's kind of done the same, but with lithographs as well, you know, prints and other sorts of things. And there's a very well-known photographer called Simon Norfolk, has a great series of pictures of the Rhone Glacier now, because they've actually covered it with, they have this kind of amazing kind of sheeting, plastic sheets that you put over it to try and reflect the heat back up.
Wow.
To try
like
and save
what's left. Like a sort of Christo installation.
Yeah, yeah, amazing. And it looks bizarre, and it's kind of sad to see that this huge old giant that you see in this postcard here has been reduced to such a little thing.
Yeah, well, I guess whether you're bemoaning their the decline of these things, or whether you're simply sort of in awe of them, putting faces on them and bringing them to life does show a certain. It brings it to life. It brings the story to life.
Yeah, it really does for me. And the other thing I like about this is there's some very beautiful handwriting on the address on the reverse side.
Oh yes, but it's Madame Chaubert in Paris.
Yeah, it goes to the Rue Bretagne in Paris.
Nice.
But it's of, and it was sent in 1902, although I think that, as I say, the lithograph is from 1898.
Oh, okay.
But it's of the era when you weren't allowed to write on the back, so...
No, 1902, the divided back came in Britain, but I'm not sure it came in France at the same time, maybe a year later.
Yeah, and so there's very little space to write on this card, except for one tiny little area down in the bottom left. And in this incredible tiny handwriting, she has written, or I think it's a she, "My very dear Josephine has had a son on the 1st of April.
Oh.
He is doing well. Good hello from us all."
Oh, so a proper message, real news.
No, proper message, real news. And you know, a lot of the postcards that you are attracted to, you know, it's about the message, but not many of mine have them. But this is a great message.
Yeah.
And actually very beautifully written as well.
And you think Killinger was the lithographer or the publisher or...?
I think he was the lithographer. I think there's a publisher's mark on it. Well, no, actually there isn't.
Yeah,
but
it will be the same thing as well.
Yeah, I have had a Google around about him, but there's not much on the internet about him. But I'm pretty sure he's the artist that created these pictures.
Yeah. Oh, they've got a sort of distinct and recognizable look.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for introducing us to these strange, brought-to-life mountains. There are many very interesting cards in your book. One I wanted to draw attention to was the revolving solarium on page 161. The card itself is not remarkable, but the subject matter is very, very strange. So it's this brutalist building...
We're halfway between a windmill and something out of Star Wars or something like that.
Yeah. So it is a windmill until you reach the top.
Yeah.
And then it's not.
Imagine a windmill, but then instead of having the sails mounted so that they're vertical and go round, they are mounted horizontally. So they go around on the horizontal plane instead.
It's almost like a sort of fairground ride, but built
that's
much
exactly
more solidly.
It. Yeah, that's exactly it, yeah.
And this was so that you could take the sun all day, would it?
Yeah, it was the brainchild, I believe, of a Romanian doctor who was down in Aix-les-Bains, which is sort of on the edge of Provence and the foothills of the Alps. And this was, you know, one of the big phases of people going to the mountains, obviously, was for their health, for tuberculosis or going to sanatorium for other different ailments that they had. And I guess...
The sun was a cure then rather than something we're more cautious of.
Yeah, exactly. And so he thought that maybe the best thing you could do for the patients was to just have them in the sun constantly all day. So by creating this, you know, revolving device with long arms on which were mounted, well, small bedrooms, I guess, inside the structure, you could turn the arms so that the patients were constantly in the sun all day.
And hold tight, we're going to turn. 10 degrees.
Yeah. Which is almost a bit like the... you sort of get revolving restaurants now, don't you? You get this revolving restaurant in the top of the BT Tower, I think, at some point.
Well, there was, and you bring me on to my next card.
Uh-huh.
So we'll be jumping back to the Alps shortly, but I'll give you one more quick one of mine in the past postcard style. And yes, and Max didn't know this, it is the BT Tower. So you are.
Absolutely seamless.
A revolving restaurant. Almost uncanny. Yeah. This is actually a little multi-view. It's got, cleverly, it's got the BT Tower, or it would have been then, the Post Office Tower, down one side. And very close to where we're recording this, I might add. And then you've got, actually not a well-known angle of Piccadilly Circus, then Buckingham Palace, then, I don't know, Troop in the Colour or something. It's a real 70s card, 1977, in fact. And, I just like the detail on this, on the message. It says, "Dear Vi," this is to V. Sumner of Skelmersdale from Graham. Graham likes is fond of Vi. He gives her 6 kisses. And he says, "I'm writing..." And the next bit's obscured by one of the many stamps. He's got penny stamps. It's cost 8p, but he's... 7p. But he's written it before he put the stamps on, so he's made a bit of a mess of it. He says, "I'm writing this on the coach as it tries to get out of the car park." So it's action. He's writing it as we find out how he's writing it. "We should have left at 5:15, but some were late getting on bus and we are now in a jam. Wembley is great, but the game was poor. All my love forever, Graham." A couple of things jump out. "All my love forever" is a really nice thing to say, I think, really, from what appears at first to be rather functional. You know, we're in the car park.
And with 7 1p stamps, suggests a sort of parsimonious attitude.
But then there's a real intensity of feeling.
Yeah, I like that.
And then I wanted to find out what that was about, so I had a quick look on the internet, which is very useful. And it turns out they... on the 13th of August 1977, it was the Charity Shield before the football season started, and it was Liverpool against Manchester United because Liverpool had won the First Division and Manchester United had won the FA Cup, and it was a goalless draw. So that's why he said the match was poor.
So you can't even tell if he was a fan of one or the other. It was just poor either way.
Yeah, and if he's in Lancashire, I mean, he really could be Liverpool or United. Yeah. I don't think we'll know.
He could be in between, couldn't he?
If you're listening, Graham, or even Vi. And Vi was Mrs. V. So it must be her, I'm assuming, her husband or lover. Who knows?
Brother?
All my love forever for your brother and sister.
Yeah.
I think it's a
weird,
bit romantic.
Maybe.
It's a bit romantic for that.
Yeah.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to Podcast from the Past, the postcard podcast. My guest today is Max Leonard. Oh, here's a surprise. We've received a postcard. The card is from H. Wallington, Wollaston, perhaps. And H. Wollaston says, "Dear sir, could you please renew the following books? 13762, 15906, 13934, 20280. They're due for return on the 20th of July. Well, sorry, Mr. Wollaston, we can't do that. Right then, before we hear the next of Max's postcards, I got to thinking about mountains on postcards, and it reminded me of a particular phenomenon, which actually you've kind of touched on, Max, so I just thought I'd share it, and that is the souvenir franc, the special mark that says you've been up a mountain or you've been somewhere. And I think this probably started with the Eiffel Tower, actually. And they probably were the first to do this. So you could have a cut stamp that said, written from the Eiffel Tower.
Ah, brilliant.
In 1889, probably. But I'm not sure. There may have been mountains before that. And we know already that you could get one from the South Pole.
Yes.
But I picked up a couple here from... This is not the Alps. It's Mount Snowdon. Mm-hmm. But it just intrigued me. This is 1951. It's just a black and white card in terrible condition. But you got to the top and someone stamped Summit of Snowdon. And then a rather later one. This was 1990. Bill and Pauline, so we made it. It's cold up here. Mm-hmm. And again, they've got the special stamp, Snowdon Summit, 1095 metres above sea level.
Sounds about right. And although, of course, Snowdon, you can go on a train, so it's be said to be cheating.
In fact, they've got a sort of non-postal stamp that says Mountain Railway.
Ah, yes.
Maybe you have to have that as a kind of badge of dishonour if you didn't you didn't climb.
Yeah, so you can't lie to your the recipient of your card.
Yeah. I suppose they interest me in a way, like you said about the South Pole, and it's the sense that the card then becomes a validation, a proof that you did the journey.
Yeah.
I mean, in fact, most of the people who bought the cards that you sent are sending them to some extent to say, look, we made it. But with this on it, it almost adds an extra layer of authenticity.
I've seen a few like that of different places around the Alps. And one that springs to mind is another revolving restaurant, which is on the Schilthorn, also known as the Piz Gloria.
Okay.
Which was the location for... Blofeld's evil lair
on
Her Majesty's Secret Service. And actually that's a mountain restaurant, right, perched on top of a peak, but it has a revolving restaurant, and a lot of the cards from there have
the stamp.
Piz Gloria stamp on them to show that you've been...
They normally say how high you are as well, because that's part of the badge of honour.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, as a experienced mountain person yourself, I'm sure you don't get sort of all exciting about having... more numbers on the height.
Oh, but you can, cyclists love collecting, you collect patches, all sorts of different things with the heights of the things you can tick off your list of the passes you've climbed and that sort of thing. Yeah, and I think it's important to cyclists I've got a dodgy leg, so I do more walking now, and I think walkers like it too.
It's sort of proving that you did it, isn't it?
Yeah.
To yourself as much as anything.
Yeah.
I was looking in a pile of cars and I found not only do these... Snowdon give you this special stamp. You could get them when you visited HMS Victory to prove you weren't there. The pump rooms in Bath, and these are not great achievements. And then that Welsh railway station with a very, very long name.
Oh, gosh, yeah, that's a long stamp.
Yeah, it was circular, I think. Uh-huh. But so that's a different way of doing things. Now, let's get back to your Alpine cards, Max. So what's the second card you got for us? This is something a bit more... conventional in the photographic sense, I think?
Well, yes, it is. And it's another old one.
Lovely picture.
It's a picture of an alpine encampment. And the text says, Col du Parpaillon, l'heure de la soupe dans un campement de chasseurs alpins. So this is the...
soup hour.
Super. Génial. This is This is a French army camp up in the mountains.
Military, is it?
Yeah, on the Col du Papillon, which is one of the it was at this point a strategic pass. And the Chasseurs Alpins were the French specialist mountain troops.
Right. So they're effectively defending it.
They are. And what I really like about this is, you know, I spent a lot of time riding my bike around these places and got to sort of wondering, well, why are there all these roads? You know, what's the point of
this? Oh, I see. Yeah.
And so some of them are, you know, so you can take cheese from one village to the next and down to market and that sort of thing. But a lot of the ones that, you know, the kind of famous roads in France, whether you're a cyclist or you're a motorcyclist or you like driving, and a lot of them are kind of military roads,
of
essentially.
Course. That makes sense, doesn't it?
Because this part of France as well, the Col du Papillon, it's sort of north of Nice and in the middle of nowhere, more or less. But this area was Italy until 1860.
Oh, right. So it's contested.
Yeah.
It was.
And then what happened, I believe, is that as Italy was being formed as a modern nation, as in when it was being unified, Vittorio Emanuele, he gave this part of France and the Savoy region as well to Napoleon III as a kind of, you know, you help me along with my, you know, geopolitical bid to create this country, and we'll give you this land that was not particularly well served by being in Italy. And then Napoleon III went and made all these roads and hospices and that kind of thing to
right.
kind of, you know, bring the local population and make them all French again. But then 10, 15, 20 years later, he realized that suddenly there was this new nation on the other side of the border that was becoming increasingly powerful, and there was no
control.
There was no defense on that border, so right. so hence they started, you know, building these camps and different sort of fortifications, and the roads were so you could take men and artillery to and fro swiftly. But
these are incredibly characterful images of these people.
I mean, I love this because there's probably, I don't know, 40 men in there.
Yeah, yeah. All in perfect focus.
Yeah, and they're sitting around some bell tents, and it's a sort of, you know, pretty dispiriting kind of landscape. There's a couple of little trees sticking up, but it's mainly sort of
they've had to paint the mountain in at the back because it's obviously overexposed.
Well, I mean, that's the funny thing about this.
In fact, they painted both these mountains in.
Is that I think that I've been up and down this mountain a couple of times, and the mountain in the background is actually a complete fiction.
Oh, it doesn't even exist.
No.
Okay, they felt it would make a nice parallel with a tent, perhaps.
Yeah, and it does look like a bell tent, or it looks like Mount Fuji or something like that.
That's probably it, Mount Fuji, yes.
Yeah, it's a sort of, you know, the sort of stereotypical cone-like mountain, and it's all yeah. painted in white,
yeah.
and it must have been painted on the negative.
Yes.
But what I think that the kind of artifice of it, I've got a bit more to say on that, but what I love about this is you look at the different men in the picture, and there's a few, like three blokes at the bottom, like eating their supper, and then there's other people posing, and then you look harder and there's a guy sitting in a wheelbarrow being wheeled around.
Or perhaps he's injured.
I mean, he could be injured, yeah. I mean, he looks quite cheerful, but maybe he's injured.
Mutilé.
Yeah.
And then the chap on the far right is kind of posing almost in a comic way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's sort
so
of got a thing.
They're quite a rough looking bunch, aren't they? I mean, they're quite.
I think life
up there.
Life would have been pretty tough. There must be at, I don't know, you know, 2,500 meters or like 9,000 feet. And like, there's other pictures of this camp, which is just in, you know, 3 meters of snow. So,
yeah. So getting your provisions and.
Yeah, it would have been
soap,
hard.
It'd be difficult.
It would have been a hard life. But yeah. But what I really love about this, you know, well, I think first we could say that. I guess the kind of military thing is quite interesting, and I believe that in Britain, when soldiers had a reduced rate on sending cards a very long time ago, but they were definitely encouraged by, you know, the government would encourage people to keep in touch with their families
right,
by sending
yes.
cards. So there's quite a lot of these cards, and I've even seen them with pictures of, you know, people pointing themselves out with a little arrow on the front saying, "This is, you know, this is me, Mom."
Oh, okay.
So that's one aspect of it I really like, but then when you start looking at, you realize that this is a fiction, this mountain in the background, and then you realize that actually, like, most postcards are sort of a fiction anyway,
yes.
as well. So I then went back and looked at the rest of my collection, and you can say, well, you know, there's guys climbing on impossible structures, there's they're sort of framing things where scenes have been framed by ice. And think about the blue sky that you see in most postcards.
Certainly in Britain, it's never true.
Yeah, and it's just been composited in there by a postcard.
By hand,
and it's sort of like obviously way before Photoshop or anything like that. So
yes, you're telling me there wasn't a real face in that glacier.
Yeah, well, exactly, and then
and that's what the point is. There's an extent to which these are as fabricated as that.
Yeah, absolutely, and
less honest, really.
And less honest, but some of them, there's crazy clouds that you wouldn't ever see, and then there's got another one with a chalet which has got people outside with their skis and that sort of thing. But all the people are not there. All the shadows are going the wrong way.
Oh, I see. They've moved them around. Yes,
they've just brought them in from another.
There's a man here walking. He's sort of climbing up a step that isn't there.
Yeah, and then one of my other favourites is a. It's a kind of snowmobile dragging some skiers, but
it crops up twice.
It's just been put into two separate scenes, and
yes,
and so the image of the soldiers on the Col de Papillon is sort of emblematic to me of the idea that all postcards are a little bit you're saying, oh, I had this amazing holiday, the sun always shone, yes. Everything was beautiful, and the scene is kind of idyllic, but obviously it probably doesn't really represent your experience, or maybe your memory will make it seem better once you're back. But
you didn't see it anyway. You bought it.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not like you haven't created any illusions, or you simply bought something.
Yeah.
But also, I think the whole idea that we have that the camera never lies, for example, or that photographs are a real verisimilitude and a candid way of capturing. A moment, that's quite a new idea. Certainly in the beginning of the 20th century, photography was an art. And also technically, to make things happen the way you want them to happen is artificial. You do have to cheat. You quite often have to cheat. And once you start cheating, you can enhance, and then you can make it the way you want it to be.
Absolutely.
So, and the way you think it should be, perhaps.
Yeah, and then people on holiday buy your card and send back this kind of artificial vision, not false vision, but a gilded vision of the place they've been,
which is why you tut when you receive the card, for God's sake. Look, what are they trying to prove?
And that's the sort of amazing pathos, the difference between what sometimes the people say on the back of the card, kind of the miserableness, or the just prosaic nature of what they're saying, and the beautiful scene on the front just don't quite
of the card has to work for everyone who buys that card, and they might sell 100,000 copies of it. The back of the card is unique. That's just one person writes that. So there's a kind of strange funneling from the general to the particular.
Yeah.
Just flip the card over, and you suddenly move from a multitude to one soul. But I didn't realise that Alpine cards were as subject to fiction as much as seaside cards. It turns out they are.
Yeah, but I love the idea that you cannot, just paste a blue sky onto a scene, and suddenly your memory is going to be illuminated by beautiful sunlight instead of the rain clouds over the pier that you might have seen otherwise.
Yeah. And in this country, the sky is nearly always grey.
Yeah.
Even on a nice day. We've had a couple of days this summer where it's been actually like this, but not. It doesn't happen very often. Very good. Very good. Well, if you're interested in seeing what I now realise is just a bunch of completely faked up postcards. No, I'm joking. No, if you want to see Alpine postcards in all their truth, fiction, fabrication, fantasy, and reality, and have a look at Max's book, because there are a lot of cards in there, and it's very interesting and beautifully produced and put together. And thank you, Max, for sharing them with me and the listeners today. I always say the same thing. I never know where the cards will send us. Well, I had an inkling it would send us up a mountain, but I wasn't sure.
Well, it's been a total pleasure, so thanks.
Good. Now, another quick reminder, if you're listening at home, all the cards we discussed today are on the blog, postcardfromthepast.co.uk. Now, before we let Max out onto his bike and doubtless up a mountain, it's a habit for us to end the show with one of these fragile things, if I can find it. And here we are. Let me hand it to Matt. This is for you to have a look at.
Uh-huh. Right.
So, I'm sure you're familiar with what we got there.
Yep. It's like a picture disc postcard.
Yeah. It's a playable musical postcard.
Great.
I suppose.
I've not seen one of these. You used to get sort of discs on the front of magazines, didn't you?
A flexi disc. Yeah. This is, in a way, the playing surface of this is even thinner, but it's applied like a gloss to the card.
Yes.
So it's a picture. In this case, we've got a picture of Carnarvon Castle, I think, in Wales.
Is that it? Yeah.
Actually, it's such a mirror image on the moat or the lake that you could kind of look at it either way up. I'm not sure. Maybe that's the right way up. And in the, I don't know what, curtain wall, there's a hole for the spindle to go in.
It's amazing.
Now, the good people at Wardour Studios have made a digital recording of this. Stand by your beds. Oh. It's pretty bloody crackly. Oh, it's a jump. Now, I think this is from the 1960s. It sounds like it's from the 1860s.
Yeah, I was going to say, is it a traditional Welsh tune?
Yes, I think it is. I think it's... Here we go. I can imagine Harry Secombe singing this on television.
Yes, absolutely.
So, yeah, it suffered a bit, I think, this one. But it just about plays. Not bad for a postcard.
No, I mean, that's pretty fantastic, actually, that it's lasted so long.
Yeah, I don't know if it was ever sent. There's a really strange kind of tax stamp on it. I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
They're made on the whole in Romania. And then it was sort of packaged up in, I think probably in Bristol, yes, Harvey Barton and Sons.
You could say probably it's lasted longer than any MP3 is going to last. Yeah.
There you are. It's still, you know, it's resilient stuff. Yeah. Well, as the Welsh castle continues spinning at exactly 45 RPM, that's it for this time on Podcasts from the Past. I'd very much like to thank my first class guest for sharing the postcards from his past, Max Leonard. Thank you, Max.
Thanks, Tom.
And thank you for listening. Bye for now. You can see more postcards with their messages posted every day on Twitter. Do follow me, at Past Postcard. And you can buy the book, Postcard from the Past, by me, Tom Jackson, at Amazon and all good booksellers. And if you're looking for podcast production, check out wardourstudios.co.uk.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.